open session, but call the roll.
Okay.
So four of them.
Yeah, so four of them. All right, shall we call the meeting to order?
Lynn?
Here.
Hodson?
Here.
Kalinkis? Anderson?
Here.
Banks? Kohler? Emmanuel?
Here. A motion on the agenda?
I forgot. Healthcare Services Group is not going to make it. Justin had a last minute meeting this afternoon, so they're not here.
Okay, so we'll change the agenda to not include a report from Health Services Group, which was six. Okay, any other changes to the agenda? Anyone move approval?
I'll move.
Second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, approval of minutes? In your packet? Changes in the minutes?
I'll vote to approve.
Okay. Second?
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, this will be the time for public participation.
Public participation.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Well, since this is the only opportunity I get to speak, I will speak. I'd like to say that as far as the food services go, I think it's improving. I think the attitude of the people's improving and everybody's seemingly trying to make it work. On the receiving end of it, it seems to work better. I mean, everybody's trying. Next issue I'd like to address is staffing on weekends. It sucks. That's just about all you can say about it. There's not enough staff, and the staff that's here are generally not familiar with the patient's needs, or the needs of the institution. And consequently, the service that you get on weekends is marginal at best. Eventually, that'll grow up and bite us. I say us because, you know, this thing is important, this institution. It's important to the county, it's important to the people in it, it's important to the people who work for it. And I'll do anything I can, except serve on that board, to make it work, because I'd like to see it work and work better. I think the key to it is, from what I've been able to determine, is people. You've got the quality of people. You need better and more people. You seem to be staffed well. The areas I'm most familiar with are area 4 and 5 in the dementia areas. They seem to have a high quality of staff down there that know what they're supposed to be doing, and they're doing it, as near as I can tell, 5 days a week. 6 and 7 are up for grabs because you don't know who's going to be there or there's enough bodies to go around. And like I say, I'll get you sooner or later. I can't address the issues in 2, 3, and 1, 2, and 3 because I'm not familiar with what really goes on down there, as near as I can tell. Problems are similar, but a little more relaxed because the patients are different. They don't require quite the level of help and understanding that you have in the North End. Again, it looks like it. About 25% of your, or maybe a little more of your labor is spent in 4 and 5 at the institution for a whole, but you're still deficient on weekends. I would guess that the short staffing in second and third shifts is the way you cover the other areas. But anyway, that's my feelings, and that's about all I got to say tonight. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Could I ask him a question?
No. There's no interchange during public participation.
I don't know who he is. And
could you state your name?
Gadfly.
Could you
David Lager's my name. I'm sorry, I forgot to identify myself. All you guys know me, but
I didn't know if you were a staff member or what.
No.
Seen the court.
I'm a husband of a patient.
I understand.
I'm just a, I don't know what I am. Gadfly, I guess, it pretty well gets it, but I'd like to see it. See you guys and this thing succeed and be more than it is now, because I think it can be.
Thank you. Thanks. Any other public participation? Okay. So we're not going to have progress report from the Healthcare Services Group. Do you want to do the quality report?
Okay. We're going to introduce our new Director of Nurses, Kathy Vanderslice, who's been here just
third week.
Yeah. And then Brandy Newell is our Unit 2 Rehab Manager, and she's been here 4 weeks. Okay. So if you guys want to tell us a little bit about your experiences and goals.
Sure.
If you want to stand up, maybe. So that's Brandy.
I'm Brandy. I've been here for about 4 weeks. Seeing a lot of different things, mainly just getting that unit organized. It's a big thing that I need to do. Concentrating on skin issues and things like that. That's my main goal, really, is the skin. You have any questions?
Come on, Brandy, you got more than that.
Where did she come from?
You want to
tell
us
a little bit about yourself?
Been a nurse for about going on 5 years. Been in nursing about 8 or 9 years. I was a CNA, then LPN, and then RN. Main background is geriatrics. Did a little hospice, but still maintain the geriatric aspect of it. I'm from Danville. To dive in and improve and help where I can.
Thank you.
This is my turn. Hi, my name is Kathy Vanderslice. I have been a nurse for 30 years. I've got a pretty wide range of background. I started in acute care, worked in the hospital in the Fulton for about 6 months, then did labor delivery for 15 years, decided it was just time to get out of that. Went to long-term care, did a little hospice, and then got into management. So I've been in management now about 6 years. I moved here from Iowa about 2 years ago. To actually take a DON position at another facility in the area. Moved out here to be closer to my grandkids and my family who live in Indianapolis and Chicago. So that's why I'm out here. So like I said, I've been here about 3 weeks. I'm just kind of getting a feel for things and looking at things. The issues I see aren't really any different than what I've seen in other nursing homes I've been in. As far as my first impression when I came in, very friendly staff. I thought the staff was just very welcoming, which was different from where I had come from. So that was a real positive for me. Didn't notice really any odors in the building, which again, another positive. Are there things to work on? Definitely, and there's always going to be. So I'm just kind of trying to put together where I want to go with things. I do want to focus kind of over on Unit 4 right now. And with the staffing that was mentioned. I would really like to see like a recruitment and retention committee started so that we can maybe get consistent staff in consistent areas. So that's kind of where I'm going with things right now after 3 weeks.
So because you have sort of fresh eyes, if you might put you on the spot a little bit, but see if you could name three things that you said, okay, here in the next month, here's my top three priorities based on what you know now, understanding that they may change as you get deeper
okay.
into things.
Infection control, I see a lot of improvement, room for improvement in infection control. One of the things I'm working on now are just getting together really good crash carts. These are kind of the easy fixes right now. What we're using right now, I don't feel are adequate if we had a true emergency. So we've actually started that process now. And then the skin, like Brandy said, I really want to get more focused on that because I'm not seeing a lot of follow through with things. I think that's where I want to go with it. So those three things really on the radar right now.
Okay, I got two out of that.
I
only do two?
Yeah. Give me one more.
Actually, looking at falls and that, I really didn't see anything huge with that. I think the biggest thing for me is to get electronic. I'm struggling a little bit with that.
Electronic.
I can't from electronic, so I'm really focused on that. Because it does help. I mean, it really helps with the improvement, the quality of care, too, because you can get in and really monitor things a lot closer. Like where I was, I could even monitor things from home, and, you know, we could catch a lot of things before it became an issue or became a problem.
So they've both come from a fully electronic medical record. Brandy here has got 3 paper cuts already.
Which we actually went through the conversion, too.
Right.
I was a big part of that conversion with it, so...
No, it isn't.
But we made it.
But worthwhile, right?
Yes.
Thank you. Other questions?
That electronic medical records would cut down a lot of set time in the nurses' station.
That is helpful.
That's
for
a
tracking.
Big problem.
Right.
Too many nurses sitting in the nurses' station instead of working the floor. And that electronic thing, they could pack it with them and do it on the spot. And that's would save them a lot of time. Probably a lot more accurate.
Real time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because they can take that to the bedside with them, so it does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of money. I mean, I know that, but I'm saying that would be a big improvement in this facility if we could get that worked out.
Any other questions? Well, and I would just add that even though you're saying I think falls seem okay, I know that as a board we're focused on falls,
mm-hmm.
so we'll be. In fact, one of the things we asked for is to make sure that every month we get is our fall statistics. So we'll be interested in what you think we can do to continue to improve that.
They have done one thing this month. They said they fixed a lot of wheelchairs.
We did.
The maintenance guy said, I was talking to them this morning, and they said that unbelievable how many of the brakes didn't work on, so that was a good thing for them to do this month. So that would help falls a lot. Same
yeah,
way with those
right.
Chikarin, same thing with the wheel brake walkers.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are not working either. They might want to check those things too.
Absolutely.
I do have a fall management program that I've used in other buildings, so I mean looking ahead or looking down the road to see if that's something that's been useful here.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, Scott, you want to do the Karen and Scott, do the management report?
Okay. All right, on page 6, we'll start. Excuse me. Our average daily census for the month of December was 190.7, and that's down from 198.9 in November. January, we'll probably see roughly about the same census, probably just a tad lower at about 190. Medicare in December was 9.8. January should show a Medicare census of about 15. Our census today is 200, and our Medicare is 16. So when you look at the chart on page 6, you might as well just don't even bother, because it shows that we had 170 Medicaid and 9 private pay. And the reason why is we had 1,980 Medicaid conversion days for the month. And so that's roughly the majority of the 19 Medicaid applications that have been processed between November and December. And the majority of those days are being adjusted in the month of December. Now, I did put in here, without the conversion, the actual number of private days was 2,262. So that's about 73 residents. And the actual number of Medicaid residents in the building was 97. So the census really started rebounding roughly in the last week of January. And so what we ended up, so I think I mentioned in previous reports that we've been running at about 40 to 45 referrals per month from the two hospitals. In the month of January, we actually had 52 referrals. So 20 of those referrals were not accepted, and the majority of those were due to a lack of payer source. 30 were accepted. We actually admitted 28 out of the 30, and which about 11 of those were Medicare, 17 were non-Medicare, as shown on the chart on page 7. We had 20 separations for the month. And over this past weekend, we had, Kendra, correct me if I'm wrong, 4 admissions. So things have really been picking up again. So hopefully that trend will remain and we'll get our census back over 200 once again. Again, the payer mix chart on page 8, you can ignore what it shows in December, but for the year, we have a payer mix of 7.5% Medicare, 58% Medicaid, and 33% private pay, plus 1.3% of veterans. Going to page 9, net income. So again, we have a 13-month year, so we have 13 months of revenues and expenses, 12 months of the property tax revenue for the facility. So we showed a net loss in the month of December of $167,025. Again, there's a typo there. That should be December, not November. Our net income for the year is $509,000. Cash flow from operations for the month of December was a minus $107,000. On a year-to-date basis, our cash flow from operations was a positive $1.3. So reasons why our net income in December are down: the 1,980 private pay days converted to Medicaid reduced our revenue for the month by just under $80,000, because there's a difference of about $40 per day between private pay and Medicaid. Again, our property tax revenue, because we have a 13-month fiscal year, we booked half a month in November and a half a month of the property tax in December. So that decreased our property tax accrued revenue by about $40,000, $45,000. In addition, because our Medicare census was down in December, that reduced our Medicare revenue between November and December by about $80,000. On the expense side, our actual expenses increased slightly from $1.3 million to $1.32 million. On a per-day basis, our expenses actually decreased from $219 per day to just under $200 per day. And again, the majority of the reasons for the increase in the actual expenses in December is we had 2 holiday payouts in the month. And so our wages actually increased from $517,000 in November to $558,000 in December. On a per day basis, it went up from $87 to $94. Our non-labor expenses fell from $613,000 to $584,000. And on a per day basis, dropped from $103 to $99 per day. Going to page 10, our agency costs during the month of December, once again, was just under $99,000, which is pretty close to what we saw also in November. And again, hopefully what we'll see beginning in 2015 financials is a slow decrease in our agency costs as we get the new hires of CNAs on board. our CNA separations, so we ended up for calendar year 2014 with 41 CNAs leaving us. And again, that was the lowest year that we've had going back to 2008, and that's as far back as I could go. So we had two separations in October, two in November, one in December, and we did have five separations in January. So maybe not starting off year like we ended the year, but hopefully we'll continue to keep that in check.
And so with those five separations, are our open positions still at 19.5?
Yeah, but now that 19.5, and again, we haven't had a chance to confirm this. I think I mentioned in last month's report that the staff has the option to change their status from full-time to part-time, from part-time to full-time. And so we had, well, Karen, you got to remind me, we had how many?
13.
We had 13 CNAs change from a full-time status down to a part-time status at the end of October. And so that's, in terms of bodies, we still have the same number of bodies. In terms of FTEs, I'm not sure if that 19.5 includes or does not include that net effect, so. Page 11, cash position. Our cash position at the end of December was $704,000. That's up by about $179,000 from November. Our receivables fell from $5.3 million in November to just over $5 million in December. A lot of that had to do with the 19 Medicaid applications that cleared up. Our accounts payable, we're roughly on our payables between 30 and 60 days. So the takeaway from that is we're current on our payables. cash right now is probably the biggest issue that we have on two levels. Number one is the Medicaid pending or the Medicaid applications. Again, at the end of December, to recap, we had 59 applications. We're down to roughly 40 applications. But over the last 3 weeks, we have not seen very much positive movement from the caseworkers in Decatur to process any of the remaining 40 applications. So we're tackling this on a number of fronts. Number one, I've contacted Dave Strickland, our lobbyist, to once again to reach out to his contacts at DHS. And he was provided a list of 21 names of applications that are actually 2+ years or older. So I don't have the actual dollar amount, but we're talking at least $500,000 in past due Medicaid receivables just with those 21 applications. Again, the total amount that we're owed for the 40 is roughly $1.2 million. The other avenue that we're tackling is John Farney, our county auditor, has actually met with State Representative Chad Hayes, and will be setting up a follow-up meeting, hopefully with us, in the near future, and he will be contacting DHS also on our behalf. On the third front, I'm continuing to have, I will call it, dialogues with Leading Age, our not-for-profit association, and I'm continuing to hammer that whether Champaign County has a black cloud over our heads, but we cannot see any progress in getting those 40 applications processed. And again, we sorely need that cash. On any given day during the month, we may end up at the end of the month with $700,000, but our cash fluctuates by hundreds of thousands of dollars. And there are days during the month where our cash will get below $200,000. But again, we always have seen revenue being collected almost on a daily basis. But those swings are much too great, too low, in terms of our cash funds to have any level of comfort. So again, we've got that issue. The second issue that I also discussed on the bottom of page 11 is our managed care program by the state, due eligible program. We are currently owed $276,000 by Health Alliance for payments actually between July and November. I put in there June and November. We actually got paid for the one or two residents that we had enrolled in June, but we haven't been paid since July. And again, the total amount of receivables is now up to $276,000. We have our enrollment has been increasing, and we're close to, I'm know I have it elsewhere in the reports. So our enrollment as of January 1st is 40, of which 29 are in Health Alliance. On February 1st, our enrollment in the dual eligible program will drop to 36 due to some discharges, and we have some residents transfer to hospice. But as this managed care program grows and more people are enrolled into the program, we've got to get, we need to be paid by Health Alliance. So again, we've had direct conversations with Health Alliance and with our associations, and all I can tell you is for whatever reason, there's a disconnect. My understanding is all the other health plans have been paying the providers. Health Alliance seems to be the only one that hasn't been paying. We were told by Health Alliance that they're waiting to receive what is called a patient credit file from the state. That report contains the resident income information for each of the residents that are in the program. What that means is their Social Security checks or pension. So again, if Medicaid pays, is supposed to pay us $5,000 per month for room and board. If your Social Security check is $1,000, Medicaid would only pay us $4,000, and then we have to collect $1,000 directly from the resident in terms of the Social Security check. Health Alliance hasn't been paying us because they don't know what the net amount they need to pay us. Now, all the other health plans supposedly have said that there is a gentleman's agreement with the state that they will pay us the full amount, or in this case, the example of $5,000, and that at some later point in time, they will reconcile with the state for the difference. But all I can tell you is that's not the message we're hearing from Health Alliance, so I'm trying to push their buttons. And what's even more confusing, or a head scratcher, is McLean County has actually been paid by Health Alliance for their dual eligibles, but we're getting a different message. So that probably is the immediate issue that we've been tackling since last week and trying to get Health Alliance to pay us. So it would be nice to get that cash infusion of $276,000. So, and again, this is just kind of the tip of the iceberg. I'm kind of segueing to this issue with the dual eligibles, but there's a lot of confusion, misinformation, miscommunication about all facets of this program, from enrollment to authorization for Medicare services to payment. And the takeaway that you can get from this is it's been an absolute nightmare managing this transition to the managed care program.
What's the Department of Insurance and CMS? So CMS is one established the contract. So what's the Department of Insurance's role in all this too?
The main state department is going to be Medicaid, HFS. CMS also has a hand in this, but Department of Insurance really doesn't have any, as far as I understand, any role in this.
CMS is the one that's going to crack the whip to it then, because they got the contract. That's the one you need to lean on.
Right, unless you got to a point where you really felt like you needed to make a complaint about a payer.
Well, again, we've started discussions with a, after approval from the state's attorney's office, there's a St. Louis-based attorney who has a lot of Medicaid managed care experience. He actually used to be part of general counsel for Centene, and they actually are, Illini Care is one of the health plans in the Chicago area. So we've been talking to him, he's reviewing our contracts to find out what kind of game plan that we can put together. But we're going to be setting up a meeting with Health Alliance to try to iron out some of these issues. But there's also issues statewide between all the providers and all the health plans, and again, all I can tell you, it's problematic at best.
And that $276,000 is on top of the $1.2 million?
Correct. On the financials that you see, there's a couple of comments. Because it's a 13-month fiscal year, these reports were not generated out of our internal general ledger system, but we actually had to hand create these, technically speaking, in Excel. So starting on page 12 is your monthly income statement for the month of December. The current activity is for the month of December. Year-to-date is 13 months worth of revenues and expenses. And the same thing with the monthly historical statement of operations that starts on page 19. That was also done in Excel. And the balance sheet came directly from our system. But if you had any questions on that, why it looks different is because we have to create those in Excel. But we'll get back with our regular financial statements starting with the month of January.
Pretty much the worst month we've had this year.
Yeah, and again, I mean, we didn't book the full month's worth of property taxes,
yeah.
So.
Right, even if you had.
But again, census is down, you know, 190. It'll be at that again in January. Our rough break-even point, and that varies based on our payer mix, but our break-even point is roughly about 195. Page 34, updated pinnacle scores for food quality and dining. Our food quality score in the month of December was 3.21. And again, that's up slightly from November's score of 3.04. Our rolling 12-month average through December is 3.43. And again, the national average is 3.69. So we are still behind compared to the national average. Our dining score for the month of December was 3.33, and that's a drop from November of 3.67. Our rolling 12-month average is 3.41, and again, we're well below the national average of 4.21. So again, I call this, if you want to call it the conundrum. We have one metric on food scores go up, the other go down, and it's the opposite of what we saw in the previous month. So again, you know, the takeaway from that is that, you know, while we continue to see little small improvements, we're not where we need to be yet on food service at this point in time. The plating times were updated with statistics from January. And again, there's really not a significant difference between January and December. And again, you know, all this is telling us once again is that, you know, they're starting the plate lines on time, on a more consistent basis. But again, there continues to be that disconnect from when the trays are put together to what is actually being delivered and how quickly they're being delivered to the residents. And that's part of the process that we continue to work on. To improve consistency on a daily basis.
As I look at this, the plating times are improved over, I think, the best we've had.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not wrong in how I'm seeing it.
No,
that.
But
okay.
But again, you know,
I realize that's not the whole indicator, right?
There's a disconnect. I mean, if you look at this, you would think everything is perfect,
right?
But again, I know it's not.
But
so
if you look at the
plating
scores,
times got better, but it hasn't gotten in the dining room.
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
And some of it is, some of it has improved. I mean, I can't say it hasn't, because it has. But it's mostly in people's minds, as far as the CNAs and the dining help that works there. You'll see one or two of them just rushing everything to get it to them. Then you'll see some others just wandering around. And there's no urgency to their job, I guess is what I'm saying. And that's what kind of kills that delivery time. If they can get everybody together to do it at the same time, it goes fine. I seen them do it one day and had them all served in 30 minutes. Next week it was almost an hour, you know, getting them served. And they still want to take, some of them still want to take the covers off and set them on the carton and take the meal. They haven't broke that habit yet either, so. It's not everybody, because some of them, there's one girl down the other day in one of the dining rooms. I was finally complimented her. I said, "You're really working." And she was. She was really hustling. Big, tall, thin girl carrying her down in dining room one. I don't know what her name is or anything. But she was doing 2-1 to the rest of them. And But it showed. It showed somebody had some enthusiasm. It has gotten better, though. I mean, it's nothing like it was for an hour and a half sometimes until they got the full serve.
Yeah. Yeah. So
just got to keep working at it.
Nothing to point out on page 36. Page 37, our 30-day Medicare readmission rate is 36% for the month of January. We had 4 readmissions out of 11 within the 30 days. And again, we are talking with health, with Carl Clinic about improving work with the medical staff on further reductions in our readmission rate. Our Pinnacle survey scores in the month of December, we had 0 out of the 16 measures that did not, none of them met or exceeded the national average for the month of December. And I'll have the annual compilation report for next month's report besides the monthly report, because that was just sent out to us. No change in the CMS star rating, except the asterisk one I'll put on there is Karen determined that our staffing numbers that were submitted to CMS was incomplete, and roughly 478 CNA hours was not submitted with the payroll data. So we're not sure. We believe that we may be able to get our staffing score up by 1 star, and if that's the case, I'm not sure. Karen is not sure, because she's the guru on the calculations on whether our overall star rating would increase. But 478 hours is a substantial missing piece, so our staffing score hopefully will increase. And we were at a 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we get that to a 3, maybe we can get overall star rating up. And again, it's something that she's already submitted, and we have to wait for the next month's report.
So they'll take the correction.
Okay. Our annual turnover rate from December through November was 49.3%. And again, so that's an improvement from last year, which was at 63%, and actually from the previous 4 years. Average daily census, going to the financial metrics on page 38, our average daily census for the year ended up 202.1. And again, that's over 13 months. And that's an increase over last year's and also over our budgeted projected census. Our Medicare was below 2013 and our budget at 15.2. And again, our payer mix, pretty much on par with what we saw last year, and maybe our Medicaid was a little bit higher than what we saw in 2013. And again, cash from operations through December was $1.3 million.
Comments or questions? I guess I come away from the objectives, and you know, there's some positive results, but there's a couple areas that we really, pitiful scores on food. I don't know what. They're not improving. Every month we say, okay, we're good. And I think we all feel like there is some improvement. We're hearing that there's some. There's a general sense of that. I realize the scores are not representative of everybody the way they're taken, but still you can't ignore the scores. And I don't know what we do, but you guys need to do it, but sitting down with the healthcare consulting group, we've got to set some kind of time period by which we say we have to see some improvement. We have to see some improvement by another quarter or something like that, because otherwise we are just, the whole point of having the metrics is to figure out where we go. So I guess they're not here tonight. I was kind of asked them about it, but I'd ask you guys to go back and set some expectations about when we begin to see the
improvement. And we've got a conference call that's going to be scheduled for tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, great.
With them, so.
Great.
There's Scott. Today, I was talking to some people here, and I had a meeting this morning with the care plan meeting, but anyway, I was talking to the dietitian quite a bit this morning, the dietitian of the company, and she's pretty sharp. I'll give her credit, she's pretty sharp. But she was saying this morning that they got to re-look at the menus, because the menus, they're not buying some of this, like, stews and things like that. And they were tickled to death, some of them today, they were going to get fried chicken again on Sunday.
They're definitely voicing, they don't like the chicken olive orange.
Yeah, they're not, that's what's killing this Pinnacle thing, is that menu that some of them they've come up with. And
the other thing is, I mean, that's the family perspective.
These people want the stuff that they had at home, the old home-cooked food. That's what they're looking for. They're not looking for these exotic dishes that they put an exotic name on, you know, and try to pass it off. I know I used to have a man, Quincy, that every time we had fried chicken, he'd show up at my office and say, "My mom didn't fry chicken that way." Well, for 600 people, you got to oven fry.
Yeah. You
know? And but that's the thing that gets to them, you know. They want to see that what they had 40, 50 years ago. And that's what they're looking for. And she realizes that, I think, now.
And she's been working on it.
And that's
the
what she's saying.
Yeah, she has.
We talked a long time this morning, and she explained that that's where the complaints come from. And that's what's affecting this Pinnacle score. Is there any way we can go beyond 15 people, maybe 30, with that Pinnacle score for a month and see what it does show? You may be just getting segregated down to a certain small group.
If
you get a small, bad month on 15, it's going to kill the Pinnacle score.
Well, and this past month, there were a lot of people who didn't comment, so there was no score to be had. It wasn't scored, so that dropped that score also. Yeah.
So, well, I'm saying you might want to broaden that Pinnacle score a month and just see what it does.
So we have 15 completions anyway, right?
Right.
15 is a pretty small number out of 200.
It is. And if you don't have
right.
a mock
no,
completed, it really is, right?
So that's why we started looking at the 12-month rolling total and then taking a look at the 12-month summary, because that gives you roughly 170 or so responses back instead of 15 on a monthly basis. But again, you know, we went to the Pinnacle because it's a third-party company that actually calls family members, 15 a month, and they're supposed to be random, and it's not anonymous unless the family member specifically wants to remain anonymous. So again, you get all, you know, besides positive, we also get negative feedback, and Karen forwards all the comments, positive and negative, back to the respective department managers, and every single one of the comments, especially the negative ones, are followed up on if we know which resident it is. So it is also a quality assurance tool
right.
that we have. Now, you know, the only prohibitive thing with increasing the number of interviews is cost, because it's $25, I believe, per interview.
If they draw a name and call a family member, and the family member's in California and says, "Well, I haven't seen my parent for a year," do they take that one out of the mix and then call somebody else?
No.
Because I think if you looked at the actual number of the family members of the people you're calling, how many of them are actually in the facility, you'd probably find out that a very low percentage of them actually know what the food is like.
A lot of times they pass on that question, yeah.
They just, so that's what you were talking
right.
about, that they didn't answer because they didn't know.
Right.
But that should be consistent throughout all the months. That wouldn't
right.
get worse, like, in the last couple months.
No, it seems like this past month, overall, at the Pinnacle, comments were positive, but the scores were lower.
Yeah.
So it, just
okay.
because of non-answers.
And again, that's, you know, it's clearly not perfect, but
right,
I think...
Right, but still, it's an indicator,
right?
Right.
You'd be surprised how many families have never seen that person in a year.
You're right.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I mean...
But that's got to be your best way of getting at it. You can't...
Right.
Okay, and I'd just like to compliment in terms of the turnover rate. I mean, 50% is... best, as you said, that we've had for 5 years and going in the right direction, and that long run has just what we've talked about today, some consistency, it's going to help improve things. So, other comments from anybody else? Okay. Anything else on the management update?
Let's see. We talked about the dual eligible enrollments. The IGT and managed care, I don't need to cover. There's been no progress on that. The dual eligible transition issues, we've kind of touched on. Again, you can read that, but again, that's one of our biggest, if you want to call it strategic headaches that we have with this program that we're going. Bottom of page 40, Medicaid payments. It did include an article from the February 3rd issue of the Chicago Tribune. It doesn't speak specifically about nursing homes and Medicaid, but the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid expansion, this article is saying that despite the fact that the feds will pick up most of the tab, eventually the state will have to pick up 10% of the enrollment expansion tab, and it's a big chunk of change. And so when I read that, I'm saying that the state doesn't have enough cash coming in to pay its bills now, and it's only going to get worse. So we talked about the Medicaid pending, Medicaid application issue, the not being paid by Health Alliance on the managed care. So the third whammy is possible payment delays. And I know we've talked about this before. One of the things that we had looked at a couple of years ago was revenue anticipation notes, or a vehicle to be able to borrow against our Medicaid receivables in the event that there's a payment slowdown. So a couple of years ago, we developed a revenue anticipation note in conjunction with the county treasurer. Now, what wasn't good about that was the fact that we actually shopped the revenue anticipation notes around to 26 different lending institutions. All 26 stated that they would not partake or buy the revenue anticipation notes because they did not want to have any additional exposure to state business. Now, will that response be any different this time around? I would say probably not, but it's something, it's an option that we have to explore in the event. And again, I'm not saying that the state has said that they're going to start payment slowdowns, but there's been no discussion of whether the personal income tax rollback or if they're going to extend the increase in the personal income tax, which is sorely needed from my perspective to ensure Medicaid payments. But we're starting work again, like we did 2 years ago, where we talked with Governor Quinn's office about special treatment for county homes to protect them from any Medicaid payment delays. So because we have a new administration in place, we are starting to resurrect those efforts, and basically we're starting from scratch. So at this point, I have no idea whether Romney's administration will be sympathetic like Quinn's people were. But we have to start those discussions, and we're going to do that with Mr. Strickland, and we'll probably end up also using the services of Metro Counties besides our Leading Age Nursing Home Association. But to me, that is the only solution that we have to protect the county homes, because we are a different beast than all the other nursing homes in the states. And you know, whether we can be treated the same as safety net hospitals like Cook County, where if there's payment delays, they still get paid within 30 days. I'd love to be in that position, but again, at this point, I can't tell you whether we have a shot at that, but we are going to start having those discussions with people in Springfield to see if it's a possibility.
Well, and federally qualified health centers get that preference, too.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So there is some precedent.
Correct.
Even in our market, so.
So, if we shop brands around and there's no takers, I'm going to look at that from a glass half full perspective. That's just more evidence that county homes need special treatment or help from the state. So again, I'll keep you posted. But we are. So we had put together a memo that we had used to educate our legislators and department leaders in Springfield, and we are currently updating that. And then we'll hit the road.
Okay.
And start the discussions.
Questions? Okay, compliance update?
And I'm going to have to apologize. I did not bring the compliance report with me, and I didn't submit it. I think that's 2 months in a row. Do not take this as we're slacking off on compliance, because our compliance efforts are continuing full bore with Josh, and we have been doing audits on a monthly basis. I actually reviewed Josh's last month's worth of audits, and we covered.
Instead of me trying to come up with one, why don't you send it out?
So I will. I do owe you November and December's report, or December and January's report, and I'll get it out to you.
Is that all right with everybody?
And again, I apologize for that.
Let's see, I wondered if you were going to. Okay, other business, the pharmacy RFP. And so everybody remember, these were the contracts that were still need to be finalized.
So,
and went out for bid.
So pharmacy and therapy are probably our two largest vendor contracts or outsourced services that we use here at the facility. Pharmacy is responsible for providing medications for all our residents, whether they're Medicaid, private pay, Medicare, and now with the managed care. They also provide pharmacy consulting services. They provide medication recommendations and also try to help us under medication cost control. And one of the big things that CMS has been pushing is trying to reduce the use of psychotropic medications. And so that's a big part of the pharmacy consulting that's provided to us. So in the RFP, we developed a matrix or a point system. So there's three main criteria that we use for pharmacy. Pricing was number one. They could get up to 20 points for that, and this is out of 100 points. References, 20 points. Pharmacy consulting was 45 points. So we had three respondents to the pharmacy RFP, and it was Uvanta, who is our current pharmacy provider, Williams Brother, and a company called RxExperts, RxExperts. Our recommendation is to renew the contract with Uvanta. Based on our matrix that we put together, we scored them at 100 points. William Brothers had 76 points, and our experts had 93 points. So again, criteria, number one, pricing. What we did was we put together a list of the top 100 medications that are used in the facility, and we asked for pricing from each of the pharmacies. Now, our experts did not submit any pricing, and we were not able to get any pricing from them. But between Uvanta and Women's Brothers, Uvanta had the best pricing between the two. References, I think across the board, they were positive, but I can say Uvanta's references were excellent. And with, was it William Brothers or our experts that we had two references that return calls? Or am I getting that mixed
our
up?
Experts.
Our experts, okay. Administrative support. What Uvanta does, and what they all do, is daily deliveries, stat deliveries, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that usually is done through Walgreens. Very good in-servicing that we get from Uvanta. The pharmacy consulting, Uvanta has provided us in-servicing on regulatory changes, IV training for nurses, drug reduction and formulary management. We try to keep our drug costs under control as much as possible. The pharmacist is off-site on a monthly basis, and the pharmacy consulting costs were the cheapest or the most cost-effective with Uvanta. And again, they've been, with the psychotropic medication reduction plans that we've had in place, they've been able to reduce our psychotropics by 17% since the program has started. So the pricing was basically the tiebreaker. And again, Uvanta had the cheapest pricing. And again, it wasn't a substantial difference, but they were the most cost-effective in terms of pricing.
We've been
completely satisfied with the work that they've had. So again, my recommendation is we renew the contract with Uvanta.
Questions? Comments? Mary, you have a comment?
No.
Oh, okay.
You need a motion.
Okay. You have a motion?
Motion. Second.
Motions to approve the recommendation. Okay, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay.
All right, the next RFP was for therapy services. Again, our current vendor is Cimbria formerly called Alliance Rehab, and they've actually been in place since 2008 when MPA first took over management, and we actually did an RFP back then for therapy services. What does the therapy vendor provide? They manage the therapy program that's covered under either traditional Part A managed care or Part B therapy services. They provide the program manager. They also provide the staffing, which is the physical therapist, occupational therapist, speech therapist. We also have a respiratory therapist that they're providing to us. They're also part of what we call a multidisciplinary process for assessing all of our residents from a rehab standpoint, care planning, helping us with the minimum, the MDS assessment coding, and also discharge planning, clinical protocol development, education to both the therapist and to our own nursing staff, marketing of our therapy program, and also we had talked about before, the process to develop our outpatient therapy program for our adult daycare center. So our RFP had five main criteria, and we actually developed 14 specific questions within the five areas. Pricing, contract terms, and again, this is out of 100 possible points. Pricing was 10 points, references, 25 points, administration and corporate support, 25 points, program manager, 30 points, staffing and turnover, 10 points. So we have three respondents: Cimbria, current vendor, again, Rehab Care Group, and Health Pro. And Health Pro used to be called Comprehensive Therapy when they were a Illinois-owned program, and the owner actually sold the company to Health Pro, which is a national therapy provider. So again, most of the standalone facilities, nursing homes across the country, find it much more cost-effective to outsource their therapy services, and it's usually pretty difficult for a facility to be able to hire and maintain their own therapy staff. And again, it's usually from a quality standpoint and a price standpoint, it's much more cost-effective to outsource the therapy services. So based on the 14 questions and the matrix, the evaluation ended up with Health Pro having the highest number of points at 93 points. Rehab Care Group was 76 points, and Cimbria Alliance was 55 points. So the recommendation to Health Pro was based on pricing. Number one, they were the most reasonable. And without going into the details of how the pricing works, they were at 96 cents per therapy minute. Rehab Care Group was 97 cents per therapy minute. Cimbria was 98 cents per therapy minute. So not a big difference between pricing. And again, that's why the pricing terms or the weight was only 10 points, because we knew based on our experience that pricing doesn't vary much between providers. I mean, it's pretty standard. And it's probably been, 5 years ago it was a buck per minute, and now it's gone down by a few more cents. References, which again, total allocated points possible is 25. The best way to summarize this is Health Pro's references were excellent. For the other two companies, they were good. But all the references from Health Pro were just, if you want to use the five-star rating, they were all five stars versus three or four. I mean, it was emphatic. Solid, very responsive, approachable, solid staff, outstanding, good therapy director, regional support, great, very ethical and honest. Director, superb. What we got from references for Rehab Care Group and Cimbria was just, solid, good. Nothing like they were jumping up and doing cartwheels, which is what Karen was really getting from the references at Health Pro. Administrative support. Health Pro will provide, and here there was not a lot of difference between Rehab Care and Health Pro, but Health Pro would provide monthly management reports with specific performance or outcome measures, where they would do it by diagnosis. So meaning for hips, they would tell you that your score on admission to the facility would be X, your score when you discharge off of therapy would be Y, and they would be able to match that up against the national average. Rehab Care Group had the same thing, different type of measure, but basically same process. Cimbria did not have anything close to that. So you missed the point on that. And again, that was a big part of what we were looking for. Support from the regional area manager. Rehab Care Group regional manager is responsible for 27 homes. Health Pros regional manager is responsible for 10 programs or buildings. Cimbria, I can't remember what the number is, but one of the problems that I've been having is having consistent regular visits from the program manager. And again, you know, roughly probably one or two times in the last 12 months is when we've seen the area manager actually at the facility. So that has been, again, problematic from my standpoint. Compliance program. I put this in here, but I want to make it very clear that compliance was not a specific requirement in the RFP, but both Rehab Care and Health Pro mentioned it in their responses that they have a very, very aggressive active compliance program. Cimbria, again, I guess I can't fault them for it because it was not asked, but they did not submit any compliance program information. Health Pro has an ongoing audit mechanism where they have triggers that will automatically require audits of medical records at the facility. Their software system has been customized to have automatic edits or ticklers to their staff to make sure that documentation is appropriate based on CMS documentation requirements. Health Pro also provided a very detailed program assessment of our program to improve our therapy mix, which would potentially increase our revenue, programming, a plan for improved documentation, as well as I mentioned before, compliance. They were the only bidder out of all three to actually address improving our Medicaid case mix, which would ultimately improve our Medicaid rates, because our Medicaid reimbursement is now based on the MDS assessments. Again, was not, did we ask for that specifically? We did not ask for that specifically, but they threw that in there, so that did help us separate them from the other two. Program manager, again, this was weighted 30 points or the most. Cimbria obviously has a program manager in place, a newly hired manager that was been in place for the last few months. Health Pro and Rehab Care Group did not have an identified program manager, which is not, which is expected for a company trying to get the business. Health Pro said that they would provide an internal interim manager while they were doing their search. Rehab Care stated that they had several internal program manager candidates that they could put in place on an interim basis. But for Health Pro and Rehab Care Group, they would both work with us to find a program manager that met both their needs as well as our needs. One of the stipulations is that we have to be actively involved in the interviewing of a program manager. And again, they both agreed to provide that assistance or to allow us to do that. Staffing and turnover, Rehab Care's staffing turnover statistics was 10%. Health Pro was 11%. Cimbria did not submit any turnover data, but from actual, from what we've seen with our therapy department, you know, they have very little turnover, but again, they did not submit any turnover information that was part of the RFP questionnaire. So based on our matrix, again, we scored Health Pro the most, again, at 93 points. I'm sorry, not 93 points. Yeah, 93 points. Rehab at Care Group at 76. So the biggest problem we had with Rehab Care Group, I guess I wouldn't call it a problem, is I call this a conflict of interest. They already provide contract therapy to four nursing homes in Champaign County. Helia, Champaign-Urbana Nursing and Rehab, Clark Lindsay, and Illini. So my concern is, how can they differentiate, help us in marketing to differentiate our therapy program when they are already in four out of the six main nursing homes in Champaign County? To me, that's a big deal. Health Pro does not have any facilities in Champaign County. Now, they would be new to the market, but that's okay. But I just can't see how Rehab Care could really provide us with the ability to set our rehab program apart from everyone else. And to me, that's a big issue. Cimbria, to recap, did not provide any outcome measures. They talked about a proposed marketing plan, but I'm gonna say ironically, it has never been offered to us previously. They did not submit any copies or examples of marketing materials. The other two companies did provide us with examples of marketing materials that they could use to provide to discharge planners, to surgeons, physicians, to say, okay, we took care of one of your patients and here's how great they did after being rehabbed here at the facility. Again, outcome measures is also part of the marketing materials, and that's one of the things that both the health plans and the hospitals want to look at. They want to see objective evidence to show that our rehab program is successful in improving the physical abilities of our patients. Inconsistent corporate management oversight, and again, no compliance discussion, but again, it was nice to see that the other two companies have a very active compliance program. And again, while it wasn't part of the RFP, therapy has the bullseye of CMS. All the nursing homes that are getting hit with corporate integrity agreements or compliance issues, it's all related to overutilization or fraudulent billing of therapy services. So it's nice to see a therapy company that is actively making sure that they're doing the right thing. So it will augment our own internal compliance program.
Sounds like you have a recommendation.
And our recommendation is to change therapy companies and to award the services to Health Pro.
What's their closest home?
Was it Morris?
Yes. So they have some,
right,
mm-hmm, in a semi-rural area. Yeah,
yes.
Somewhat like us. Okay.
Right. Other questions?
Yes.
They're out of Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the regional office is in Chicago.
Question.
How long do you think before they're staffed up to be able to provide the services that you need? Because they're going to have to hire people or adjust schedules and shift people until they can hire them.
Typically, possibility is that, and again, this is just speculation, Cimbria doesn't have any other nursing homes in the area. So typically, if you know, you're a standalone facility, and you change the therapy companies, the new therapy company will talk with the existing therapy company to see if any of the staff want to remain at the facility. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they'll start recruiting. They usually have backups of using interim help or agency therapists. But
I think
again,
they said they had a 23-day fill rate once a job gets posted, so that's fairly quick.
Thank you.
And so when would the current contract terminate and a new one would start?
So we have a difference of opinion. So the contract with Cimbria has a 60-day notification. Now the question is whether the RFP itself is notification of termination of the agreement. The conservative approach is we have to provide them with written 60-day notice. So I think that's what we're going to do. So that there's no ambiguity.
But that gives somebody 60 days then to
right.
get prepared.
Correct.
This is the 3-1-8-1-8.
And this is such a critical service. I mean, this is so important to us for our Medicare population, so important for the residents. I think it doesn't sound to me like there is much, and there's a big difference between 3 in terms of your score. So I know other people have questions about the therapy.
I take it these therapists don't have non-compete agreements, that they can go from one company
to
the other.
They do have non-compete, but when they don't have anywhere to send them, it's not
then
really.
Then they release them.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay, do I have a motion?
I'll move.
Okay,
I'll
second. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Okay. Good. Great. Everything we can in therapy. And I think having those results is really, really important for referrals. Okay. Do we have a compliance program commitment reestablishment resolution?
I have it in my bag in my office. We the board back in early 2013 passed a resolution establishing our compliance program. So in discussions with Mark Escovado, who's our corporate compliance director at MPA, there's really no direction on whether we should reissue or do subsequent resolutions. However, the thought process was that, let's say in 10 years from now, the OIG comes in and does an investigation. They're going to take a look to see if there is a resolution passed.
Can we do it next month?
It would be.
Can you bring it back next month?
Yes. So we're going to take the conservative approach and say we're going to have a resolution done every year.
Okay.
That reestablishes the compliance program so there can be no ambiguity that the board of directors is supporting a compliance program. Again, in terms of regulatory requirements, we're in uncharted territories, but we're going to take the conservative approach.
Okay, how about bring that back next month?
If I could, I would just add that I believe that when is the training? I mean, you wanted every board member to sign off on the compliance acknowledgement. Is that when you would do that as well?
Yep.
Is that in addition to approval of a resolution?
That's in addition.
Okay.
And so
the other thing I would point out is by the nursing homes policies, board of directors are also to submit the conflict of interest questionnaire in March. So I would say we are establishing a precedent here that both of these will occur every March. Right, Scott?
Yes. And also, there is annual board of directors education. So there's a webinar and that needs to be reviewed. So again, Jack, because you're a new board member, I'm not sure if Margaret sent the email out to you. Lorraine, as a new board member, will have to do it. And, everyone else has done it. So
I don't think I've received anything. I got something from the county, but I had problems getting it out, and they fixed it. So.
It's okay. Not from
I'll
us.
Double check.
It'll
be directly from MPA. So we'll.
I've not received.
Okay. MPA. I'll check with Marty, but we'll send it out. So there's a link. You have to create a password, and it's a short video that you take a look at, and there's a questionnaire at the end.
Looking forward to it.
So again, but with the compliance program, one of the things that we're pushing for is that the board of directors has to be actively involved in the compliance program. So this is one of the pieces to prove that the board is actively involved in the compliance program. So it's resolution, education, and again, the conflict of interest covers both the county requirements, but it's also a requirement as part of corporate compliance to make sure that there's no conflict of interest. So again, that form will be going up next month or for March.
Okay, administrative report on MPA performance expectations.
Okay, as you all remember, you were provided last month with a document that identified issues in performance expectations. And just going back a little bit, I just would remind you that last October, in my role as administrator, and due to concerns that were being stated with regard to how the how MPA and the contract requirements were being fulfilled, initiated an administrative review, and the members of the team included Kathy Emanuel, the nursing home board chair, Sam Banks, a member of the nursing home board, and Van Anderson, who's the deputy county administrator of finance, who works directly with me. There were concerns about the annual survey and the results. There were ongoing concerns about food services. And there were concerns about the staffing of the nursing home, particularly due to the large number of management positions that were vacant and had been vacant for a while. So the review team met first and identified a list of six critical issues and performance expectations for each of those issues. And then we met with MPA, and MPA worked with us to document their responses to those issues and performance expectations, and together we came up with an action plan. So you have two documents. The attachment actually is very comprehensive. The highlights in yellow include the issues and performance expectations that were identified by the administrative team. And then what isn't highlighted are the responses from MPA with regard to each of those issues. The first document, though, which is the review itself, which is 9 pages long, has the consolidated action plan, which we all came up with as a result of our meetings together for moving forward. And you've just been provided with this document with the action plan tonight, and it's 9 pages long. I don't think we need to sit here and read through 9 pages with you, but I would encourage all of you to review it, and then we can discuss it again at the March meeting. I would point out that issue number one for a reason, and it focused on a lot of the areas that were problematic. And the action plan includes the establishment and hiring of a human resources director, someone who is an expert in the field of human resources, to deal with all of the staffing and employment issues that had been brought up as problematic throughout conversations that individuals had had. So it includes, you know, getting employee satisfaction surveys. It includes providing better management, documenting it, establishing, you know, good programs for giving employees their job performance expectations and following up. And I think Scott has provided a document which is an example of the kind of reports that you will see. But as a result of this review, you will see a monthly report on this action plan so that you know what is being done to address these issues. You'll find throughout the report that a number of issues have already been identified and plans are in place, and they'll look familiar to you because you've seen them. You've seen MPA, Scott, and Karen reporting on them in our recent meetings. But this will be ongoing as we move forward. And again, if any of you have any thoughts or ideas, suggestions, or recommendations, please feel free to call me or contact me, and I will share them with the rest of the team so that we can make sure that this represents the best possible method for being sure that we are that our management services are doing what they are expected to do through the contract that we have.
I would just like to thank Van Anderson for doing a whole lot of work on this.
Yeah,
really appreciate all the effort on that. Mm-hmm. I would encourage, as Deb said, people to have a chance to take a look at it. And if there are things you see that not only would we, as Deb said, have the monthly, here's how we're doing on the action plan, but part of some of the items in this action plan say we'll have an HR dashboard monthly. And a couple other indicators to look at that are areas of concern, so that we're dealing with hopefully some objective measures, and we know whether or not we're making progress and take action. So take a look at this. Anybody else who has comments? It's going to be available on the.
It will be online tomorrow morning as an attachment to tonight's agenda.
And so this isn't just put in front of you and says, this is it. We're looking for input on this. Okay. And just our effort in trying to address the issues that we see in the survey, that we hear in our meetings, that we hear from patients, and that collectively we said is what we have to do about it. We see a lot of food stuff in there too. Okay. So let's see if I can do this right. So we're looking at a quote.
Do you want me to do it?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Had a little help there.
I move that we enter into executive session pursuant to 5 ILCS 120/2C11 to consider litigation that is probable or imminent on behalf of Champaign County. I further move that the following individuals remain present: Scott Gima, Karen Nofke, Van Anderson, WC, and Brian Nolan.
Okay, so we'll move that, and do we need a second?
Second.
Okay, and do we want to do a roll call for that?
Yes. Lynn?
Yes.
Hodson?
Here.
Poinkas? Anderson?
Yes.
Banks? Cohort?
Wow.
Emmanuel?
Yes. Okay.
So we're in closed session.